Our guest this hour went on a search for the signature dish, the quintessential food in each of the 50 states. And then he writes about it in his book, The Mad Feast. Can you guess what he picked for Wisconsin? Which food or dish do you think defines Wisconsin the best and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about many of the signature dishes of the 50 states. What do you think is the signature dish not only of Wisconsin, but how about our neighboring states? Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Matthew Gavin Frank. He's a writer, a poet, a creative writing teacher and author, most recently of The Mad Feast, an ecstatic tour through America's food. He has worked in restaurants from Chicago to Key West and New Mexico to Alaska. For his latest book, he traveled across the U.S. in search of a signature dish for each of the 50 states. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for having me.
So why did you do this?
Likely because I'm a twitchy obsessive. I come from a long line of folks who suffer from OCD, and I found a way to channel it. Well, two ways, actually, cooking and writing. And then I thought I might as well braid the two and write about food.
No, it's great. And you said you wanted to get to the bottom of what we eat, when we eat, and where we eat in this country. Why do you suppose it's important to know the signature dishes of all of the 50 states?
I feel as if, some of the things that we just kind of take for granted when we kind of glimpse them on countless plates in front of us and then before that on countless menus, they have their stories to tell. And if we scratch at these seemingly mundane dishes and scratch and scratch and scratch, eventually some sort of inner holiness or horror will eventually leak from them and reveal oftentimes, in my research at the very least, kind of these shadowy back alleys of regional history that, when interrogated, are able to tell us about ourselves and our values, about our regional identities, and then in turn about our identities as a nation.
Yeah. So let's talk about Wisconsin. Tell us about your search for Wisconsin's signature dish.
Sure. Just to preface, it was incredibly difficult for me as an indecisive person to narrow down what began as long lists for every state to a single dish. It was very, very difficult for me. But of course, 50 chapters is long enough. I couldn't do two per state. Eventually for Wisconsin, I settled on the Sheboygan Bratwurst.
Yeah, and what led you to settle on the Sheboygan Bratwurst?
I live in Michigan now, and I'm from Chicago, and I live way up north in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan in Marquette. And when I would commute to visit family in Chicago, I would stop in Sheboygan every time on my way down to eat a bratwurst at either Harry's Diner or Schill's, and I would do the same thing on the way back up. So I've likely eaten over my weight in Sheboygan bratwurst.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so it's the personal connection to it led me toward the Sheboygan bratwurst, and then the personal connection bolstered by a lot of research and interviews that I conducted allowed me to finally settle on the sausage.
So how is the Sheboygan bratwurst special or different from other brats?
Well, first of all, it's the spice blend, which remains a mystery to me, and even to I suspect many Wisconsinites, as the folks who perpetuated, at least popularly, really fetishize their spice blend recipes and will not reveal it for anything. So even though there are corresponding recipes for each of the chapters in the book, there is no recipe for a specific spice blend because no one would reveal it to me. So it is the specific spice blend, but it's also the history of the bratwurst itself and how it came to Wisconsin. The French originally claim ownership for really all sausage, as the French tend to do, because apparently in the early 1400s, this pig that belonged to a royal family tripped over its trotters and fell into a salt spring and essentially cured itself in the salt while drowning.
What?
And so, of course, this is how salt apparently was invented, according to a couple of sources.
That's amazing.
So the townsfolk feasted on this cured meat of this dead pig and then realized how delicious it was, and then they decided to experiment with all sorts of other methods of salt and pork, curing pork, and spicing pork in various ways. And you know, then we got charcuterie. Word got out all the way to the Nuremberg area of Germany. And with their own spices, the Germans began preparing sausage. And then these German immigrants from the Nuremberg area eventually migrated out to central eastern Wisconsin and invented with some of the ingredients they found here the bratwurst.
Yeah. So how do you think the bratwurst mirrors the character and spirit of Wisconsin? What does the bratwurst as our signature dish tell us about Wisconsin?
Sure. Well, a lot of the leaps that I take in the book kind of scratch at the implications, you know, held within the foodstuff itself. Not just a direct engagement with regional history, but things like shape and texture and temperature, spice, sweetness. And I wanted to see how I could possibly exploit some of those things metaphorically, in a way that, I could connect basically regional identity, and state identity to the foodstuff itself. So, because Wisconsin is a cold, state, I'm not as cold as where I live now, but because it's a somewhat of a cold state, talk a lot about being encased and squeezing ourselves, I guess, into jackets and clothing, and how our bodies oftentimes during the cold weather months mirror the pork that is basically stuffed into a casing. We are sausages.
that we are. You have end notes for the Sheboygan bratwurst in the chapter about Wisconsin, and at the end you say, "This part of the world is confusing and beautiful. Try it with mustard."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having grown up in the Midwest, I am born and raised in Chicago, and there are so many conflicting regional narratives here in the Midwest, and also it's just this area of the country. I felt perhaps more so than any other area in the country, and maybe it's just because I'm from this area, involves really strange juxtapositions, including juxtapositions of weather. It's so incredibly hot, but it's also so incredibly cold. You know, the ways in which we express ourselves are oftentimes incredibly fascinating. We could be very secretive, but we can portray such a lovely openness. And I find these kind of odd juxtapositions that rest in the Midwest both confusing and beautiful. I find the conflicting narratives that kind of brought the Sheboygan bratwurst to us through, you know, the back alleys of history, those narratives vary, and they are confusing and beautiful, and so it's all we can do to squeeze mustard on all of it and take it inside of ourselves.
Well, speaking of things we put on brats, let's go to Rod in Weyerhaeuser. Hi, Rod.
Yes, hello, Joy. Another interesting program I just happened to turn on, and when you said that, I said, well, first of all, number one, you got to have sauerkraut, because the brats can go with sauerkraut or pork ribs or, you know, a lot of things. But it seems like sauerkraut is kind of like a main thing in Wisconsin.
So you think that the sauerkraut itself could have been the signature food or dish of Wisconsin?
Yeah, because a lot of the old people, I mean, a lot of them made sauerkraut.
Right. Well, that's a part of that German heritage, Matthew.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, sauerkraut certainly could have stood in for the brat. Though you do find a lot of sauerkraut making subcultures throughout the U.S., but there is nothing quite like the Sheboygan bratwurst. It's so incredibly unique to Wisconsin.
Well, yeah. In fact, I don't think sauerkraut is one of the condiments the Sheboygan bratwurst usually contains. Isn't it real specific? You have it on a Sheboygan bun, and it's sliced in half, and you have the specific condiments on it.
According to Harry's Diner in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, the brat is cooked on a charcoal grill, finished in a sauce of beer, butter, and onions, served on a Sheboygan hot roll with butter, ketchup, brown mustard, raw onion, and pickles, or any combination of those, but they do not add sauerkraut.
That's great. So was there a close runner-up when it came to Wisconsin's signature dish, or the Sheboygan brat was head and shoulders above the rest?
The Sheboygan brat was head and shoulders above the rest for me. I certainly could have, highlighted, because certain states, I highlight drinks, of course, too. I certainly could have highlighted Wisconsin's profound beer culture or cheese culture. But those seemed a bit more obvious to me. And once again, there are other states that are known for producing lovely cheese, maybe not quite to the extent that Wisconsin is. There are other great beer-making states. But I don't think there's another state that's known for bratwurst quite like Wisconsin. So that's... Yeah. So, but beer and cheese were things I was thinking about.
Well, you can have that alongside that brat. We are talking with Matthew Gavin Frank. He is the author of The Mad Feast, an ecstatic tour through America's food. And he went to every state and selected a signature dish or food from each of the states. We are welcoming your nominees for other states. When you think of our neighboring states, what foods come to mind, like Minnesota or Michigan or Illinois, any state, anywhere in the country? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. So which food or dish do you think defines any state in the country? We just talked about Wisconsin and our guest picking the Sheboygan bratwurst as Wisconsin's signature food. Do you agree with that? I know that some of you have other nominations, but we'll also talk about signature dishes in other parts of the country as well. When you think of a particular state, what food comes to mind? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Matthew Gavin Frank. He is the author of The Mad Feast, an ecstatic tour through America's food. He traveled across the U.S. in search of a signature dish for each of the 50 states. Well, before we move on to other states, let's talk to some callers. It's Paulette in Appleton. Well, she just dropped off. That's too bad. Let's go to Laura in Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hi, my parents were from Sheboygan. And the Schultz's in Sheboygan had great bratwurst. And Charcoal Pit on Erie Avenue had great bratwurst. And my grandfather used to grill bratwurst. Grandpa Helverson would grill bratwurst. I don't care if it was middle of January and snowing. He would grill bratwurst in the garden. And in winter, he would grill bratwurst.
Well, no. they're not just for breakfast anymore, Laura.
No.
And we need it all year long.
Yeah.
The weather can't quiet our cravings.
Very funny. Thank you very much, Laura. We have Jeremy who emails. I would like to nominate the fish fry dinner. Specifically, butterfly perch fillets, not the large ocean perch or cod, etc. To me, freshwater perch is a delicacy that we are lucky to have. The further I get from Wisconsin, the harder it is to find. Matthew?
Well, that sounds awfully delicious, and I am a fish fry freak. Of course, I live on the shores of Lake Superior, and most of the fish fry we get in northern Michigan is whitefish or trout, walleye, also. But yeah, a good perch fry is outstanding. So yeah, that would be a lovely candidate, of course. But I stand by the stoic and beautiful Sheboygan bratwurst.
I know, and we'll move on too. But there are so many people. Lynn on Facebook says, "I love our supper club fare, old fashions." The ribeye, au gratin potatoes, the relish tray, the pickled herring, Brussels sprouts, I might add a grasshopper. I don't know if you've ever had a grasshopper, Matthew, which is ice cream with cream de menthe.
Yeah, I actually have the drink. And oddly enough, down in Oaxaca, Mexico, I've had actual grasshoppers.
Oh, my gosh. No, wait a minute. That's not New Mexico's signature dish, is it?
No. The New Mexico signature dish is it's basically sauces. It's the red and green chili sauce.
Yeah, that's
but,
a good one.
This is way further south down in Oaxaca, Mexico, where grasshoppers are actually a popular source of protein.
Just misunderstood. Let's go to Molly in Superior next. Hi, Molly.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning. What do you nominate?
Well, I lived in northern Michigan for a brief period of time, so I wanted to give a shout-out to the pasty.
Yay!
Because I do think upper Michigan should be its own state, and the state food would be the pasty.
Well, you know what? I know you had another one, but let's talk about the pasty, Matthew, since that's where you're living right now, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it is indeed the dish you picked for Michigan.
Yeah, my initial reaction when I heard the word pasty was to say woohoo. So yes, that is the dish I chose for Michigan, and a lot of folks in the Upper Peninsula do believe that the UP should indeed be its own state. They talk about seceding from Michigan all of the time and calling themselves not so humbly superior. I did pick the pasty. That was actually the very first essay I wrote for this book. I did not intend on writing 49 more, but I had such fun writing about the pasty that I wondered if I had the stamina to do it 49 more times, and strangely it turns out that I did. Yeah. But the pasty was it's kind of like the calzone of the mines, and the popular thought is that the pasty originated in Cornwall and was brought to the upper Midwest by the Cornish diaspora, and then those folks started marrying a lot of folks from the Finnish diaspora. And so the Finnish immigrants started lending some of their culinary practices to the making of the pasty, and you know, meat to rutabaga ratio and spice blends and things like that. And so the Upper Peninsula pasty became a very, very unique thing that stands independent from its Cornish ancestors.
My father immigrated from Italy when he was a young boy, uh-huh. and he went to the Iron Mountain, Michigan area. That's where his family set up shop. And my mother was born in Iron Mountain, Michigan, so I've got Upper roots, and had many pasties in my day. The story I always heard about the pasty was that it was the Iron Mountain mines. The miners, mm-hmm. would take these pasties. They'd put them in their coat pocket. It was something easy to just kind of you know, take as your lunch to work. And so that's why they were so popular. Is that the story you got?
That's right, because it was basically the original pasties. It was a two-course meal encased in a pastry shell, mm-hmm. and went underground. The miners would oftentimes try and have, you know, save one hand to eat with, and then would work with another, so they would have one clean hand, and that clean hand would clutch the bottom of the pasty, and then the top two-thirds of the pasty were usually filled with a stew of ground beef and rutabaga or other root vegetables and spices. And then beneath that, the miner would actually eat downward toward his hand, and would eat downward toward sweetness. And once the miner made it through the savory meat portion of the pastry shell, he would get down to the dessert portion, which was typically stewed apples and cinnamon that was thickened a bit.
They don't make them that way anymore, though, do they?
They don't. Not so much anymore. Once the pasty was kind of rescued from the mines and became kind of a popular food that's now peddled basically on every corner in the Upper Peninsula. You know, most of these places shut down in the winter and are open during the tourist season. It's become something else, and you could find pasties now stuffed with anything from chicken tikka masala to lamb feta and mint stews.
You can even get a, and I'm guilty of this because I am now a vegetarian, you can get a vegetarian pasty, which is just, you know, the potatoes and vegetables and maybe a little, some kind of cheese sauce or something might be in there. But
that's right.
Yeah, and you know, they even sell them rutabaga or no rutabaga. I'm not, is it at a pasty if it doesn't have rutabaga in it?
These days, yes. though I don't think the original Upper Peninsula cultures that started eating them in the mines would consider it to be a pasty without rutabaga, and certainly not a vegetarian pasty. They would consider that, I think, to be oxymoronic, but today, anything goes.
Yeah. Well, Jan in Green Bay, you were going to mention the pasty for Michigan. I'm happy to hear that it is the signature dish.
Yes, I am.
Do you like pasties?
I love them. I went to school at Northern Michigan University for several years, and I had the wonderful experience of having some Cornish ladies teach me to make pasties.
You make them? Do you still make them?
I do. I keep them in my freezer because you have to make 20 or 30 at a time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
yes, and I get great kudos from my family when I share my pasties.
Oh, my gosh, that is wonderful. My mom tried. My mother tried so hard to make pasties, and she just wasn't a very good cook. But bless her heart, she tried. So do you have, do you have to have them with ketchup? I think that's a rule,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yep, absolutely. But I'm actually from south of the bridge, from just south of Mackinac City, and I want to say that when the UP succeeds, we're going west.
Aw.
Yeah. All right.
We're going to cut it off at Traverse City and take the cherries and the bridge with us.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jan, for sharing. You know, but that does bring up, is Lower Michigan a whole different state? I mean, they don't identify with the pasty, do they?
Not so much, no. There's this kind of loving, sometimes not so loving, I guess, but I'd like to think mostly loving, rivalry between the Upper Peninsula and Lower Michigan. The the Upper Peninsula folk can have some cruel nicknames for folks who live below the bridge, like trolls, because they live below the bridge. So everybody from Lower Michigan to folks in the UP is a troll. I think they like to believe that that's a fun-loving nickname.
Well, maybe Lower Michigan would claim, just like somebody suggested, that one other nomination for Wisconsin could have been the Door County Cherry Pie. They make they grow some good cherries in the Lower Peninsula too, I think.
They do. Yeah, I lived in Grand Rapids, Michigan, actually, for 3 years, and it's such a wonderful fruit basket. I actually miss that aspect.
You know, Jan from Green Bay just dropped off. I was going to ask her, the Green Bay area is the only area in the state that I'm aware of, and I'm wondering if you've ever heard of this food, Matthew. It's a chicken stew called booyah. Have you heard of that or not?
I don't know it.
Okay. All right. Well, it's maybe somebody can call in and talk a little bit about that. But somebody on Facebook mentioned that as well as a signature food. But to me, it's just really just in the Green Bay area, hardly anywhere else.
Okay. So I am going to jump on Google right after our discussion.
Let's talk a little bit. A caller, we have an open line now. We had callers lined up, and then everybody just decided to drop off. 1-800-642-1234. We're going to talk next about Minnesota and the signature dish for Minnesota. We'll also talk about Illinois, and we don't have to stick to the Midwest. We can talk about any state in the nation. Maybe you're a transplant from somewhere else. What was your home state's signature food? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Matthew Gavin Frank. He is the author of The Mad Feast, an ecstatic tour through America's food. And he has in here 50 chapters with 50 signature dishes from all 50 states. So let's talk about Minnesota, and we did have a number of callers who were going to correctly guess that the hot dish should be Minnesota's signature dish. What is a hot dish?
Hot dish really, and I know this isn't really selling it so well, but it is a catch-all casserole. Oftentimes burst in desperation it was burst during some lean economic times where folks combined basically everything they had into a single dish, and it was usually very hearty, stick to your ribs food. So according to my research, all hot dish needs to combine are heartiness, great taste, and adaptability. And the casserole actually retains no official recipe or rules. So it could be an amalgam of hamburger, mashed potatoes, string bean, cream of mushroom soup, lechoy fried onion hot dish. It usually has a crispy topping. There could be a hot dish made with canned tuna and Kraft macaroni and cheese, with canned peas or canned corn. It could be topped with anything from potato chips or shoestring potatoes or cornflakes, or once again, those crispy lechoy fried onions. And so it's interesting. The cream of mushroom soup was an ingredient that became so favored and so ubiquitous that it actually became better known in early hot dish circles as Lutheran binders, as the dish itself was said to be created in the basements of Lutheran churches in order to feed congregations during lean times.
You shared with us the recipe for Bulldog N.E. Tater Tot Hosh. What is Bulldog N.E. Tater Tot Hot Dish? Wow, that sounds good.
So the Bulldog Northeast is it's a restaurant in Minneapolis, and it's funny. Hot dish was such a humble dish for so many years, but there are a lot of chefs now in Minneapolis and St. Paul and beyond who are trying to elevate the hot dish to gourmet status. As a matter of fact, there's a restaurant in downtown Minneapolis called Hot Dish, and they're trying to make it haute cuisine. But the Bulldog's version of a tater tot hot dish involves things like a roasted mushroom bechamel sauce, instead of the canned cream of mushroom soup, braised beef brisket, caramelized Brussels sprouts, and so on. So it's, I believe they top it with black truffle oil and Parmesan cheese and things. So they've definitely elevated the casserole to gourmet status.
I just like that there are tater tots in it. It's funny.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The ingredient, the tater tots are actually combined with the Brussels sprouts in the recipe, and you know, they are truffled with black truffle oil. But yeah, it still calls for 6 cups of baked tater tots.
And we do thank you for sharing that recipe with us, and we are posting that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Why do you say in this in the title of this chapter, the hot dish muddies the water?
Well, that actually comes from this legend, I suppose, as to how Minnesota as a state got its name. And so apparently, according to state legend, the Sioux demonstrated Minnesota to the settlers. Minnesota is said to mean sky-tinted water. But the Sioux did not mean that the water was blue. Given the weather there, the name more accurately translates as somewhat clouded water or snow in the water. And so when the settlers came into Minnesota, the Sioux would demonstrate Minnesota or snow in the water by dipping a hollowed gourd into a lake. And then the water was clear, and then they would slowly drop by drop pour milk into the water. And according to state legend, when one could no longer see to the bottoms or sides of the gourd, when the water itself was sufficiently unclear, the Sioux would nod to the settler and whisper the name of our state and would say Minnesota. So Minnesota means muddied water or snow in the water or water that is not necessarily clear. So it ties into the name of the state.
We are talking with Matthew Gavin Frank. He has written the book, The Mad Feast, An Ecstatic Tour Through America's Food. And he traveled to all 50 states in search of a signature dish or food that is quintessential in a given state. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your nominations. When we come back, we'll visit Illinois. And whatever other states you would like to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So which food or dish do you think defines a particular state? We've already talked about Wisconsin and the signature food our guest picked. That is the Sheboygan Bratwurst. We've already talked about Michigan and the signature dish that our guest picked for Michigan, the pasty. There's also the hot dish, which is Minnesota's signature dish. We still have to talk about Illinois and Iowa. And what else? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Matthew Gavin Frank is the author of The Mad Feast. Before we get to other states, Monique in Greenleaf can tell us about Booyah. Hi, Monique.
Hi. I am of Belgian descent. We have, you know, my dad's side was very Belgian, and I grew up eating Booyah mostly at church picnics, but I would define it more as a soup. And now in the Green Bay area, you can go to a lot of different Booyah sales. You know, there are a lot of times fundraisers for churches and clubs and things like that. The recipes vary depending on who's doing the cooking. But I think the common denominator is it's usually cooked over a wood fire in a big Booyah kettle, which is like 50 gallons at a time.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to make it authentic, you put the whole chicken in, you know, not cut the chicken up, but you cook it with the bones and everything. And that's how I grew up eating it as a child at all the church picnics. So I love it, but you don't just make it over the stove at home usually. That, to me, would be just chicken soup, or Booyah would be cooked over the wood fire.
Thank you very much, Monique, for clarifying that. Yeah, we looked it up. A thick soup of Belgian origin made throughout the upper Midwest, according to probably Wiki, I'm not sure. It often requires 2 days and multiple cooks to prepare. There are also specially designed bouillabaisse kettles for events meant to serve many people at a time. So, Matthew, you'll have to try that sometime.
I absolutely will. It's so interesting how many states have dishes that are not necessarily similar to bouillabaisse, but it's a similar cooking process where it's done communally, where the community comes out around a single pot and feeds together off of it. In Wyoming, for instance, the signature dish was milk can supper, which is essentially, it's very similar. You shove a whole chicken into a milk can along with some ears of corn and vegetables and broth. And it's typically done, and made for communal picnics and once again in churches to feed congregations. The recipe that I solicited for that, comes from a church in Wyoming, and, it's fabulous how that's still part of our culinary culture in this country.
Michael on Facebook says, born and raised in Nebraska before moving to Wisconsin, steak has to be Nebraska's signature dish. Is it?
Steak?
Yeah.
I actually went with kind of a weird one for Nebraska, and it was a Nebraska spoon bread, which is kind of a soft, spoonable cornbread that really is very, very different from cornbread you get anywhere else in the country. I know a chef in Omaha who was campaigning when I was doing my interviewing very heavily for the spoon bread, and I was seduced by it, so I went that direction. But I love Nebraska beef.
Yeah, and you picked, and I'm not surprised, deep dish pizza for Illinois, because that's the Chicago style, right?
As a Chicago boy, I couldn't escape it. I was reared on deep dish pizza, so I went with it. I have such a personal history with it, and it does seem to define the city of Chicago. I suppose not so much the rest of the state of Illinois, but I concentrated on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So where can I get the best deep dish pizza in Chicago?
Well, I still love Gino's East. Gino's East puts out such killer pizza. The original Gino's, they cut their pepperoni so thick, and you could request the pepperoni charred, and so they actually char the pepperoni on either side as if it were some little steak on its own, before they top it on, before they put it on the pizza. And it's just such a rich pizza, and there's such a depth of flavor there. It's kind of like pizza fudge. It's incredible. I also love Medici on 57th. They were kind enough to contribute a recipe to the book. So I would oscillate between those two.
Artis in Delafield is with us. Hi, Artis.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. One of the foods, I grew up in Chicago, and one of the things you can only get in Chicago is a real Italian beef sandwich. You may have them here, but they're not real. They're not. They're just not.
They're not real.
Anytime I go to Chicago, even if I'm going to a party, I specifically leave room so that on my way home I can get one.
Do you agree, Matthew?
I have such Chicago pride. I agree wholeheartedly. I remember as a kid going to Al's Italian Beef, with my dad, and just sitting on the hood of the car and eating these really messy and delicious Italian beef sandwiches, and having the oil from the hot jardiniere that was on the sandwich just drip down the front of my shirt. And that was summer to me. Italian beef and Italian ice is in the city.
Well, before we run out of time, we have to hit. I kind of was teasing Iowa, our neighboring state, because I thought, what kind of a name is a loose meat sandwich anyway? I also was kidding, because I am now a vegetarian, as I mentioned, but before I became a vegetarian, mm-hmm. I had the pasty and the bratwurst and certainly deep dish pizza. I did not have a loose meat sandwich, and I wondered, is this, I think I had a sloppy Joe in Wisconsin, but that's more tomato sauce. This is like a sloppy Joe without tomato sauce. Is that a way to describe it?
That's one way to describe it. Yeah, absolutely. If you call it a sloppy Joe to somebody from Iowa, their heads will explode. there are so many names for the loose meat sandwich. Maybe some of the listeners have heard the other names. It's also known as the Tavern, the Made Right, the Canteen, the Tasty. And this doesn't sound so good, but it's sometimes known as the Wobble or the Slump. They actually go so far as to sometimes call it the Sloppy List, Sloppy Joe, just to distinguish it from the Sloppy Joe itself.
Yeah, and in fact, a couple on Facebook were calling it the Made Right. And there's a restaurant called Made Right here in Madison, and I think they do serve the loose meat sandwich. So how did that come to be in Iowa?
Again, according to my research, this couple, Abe and Bertha Kaled, had a restaurant that is now closed in Sioux City, Iowa, called the Ye Olde Tavern. And they invented the loose meat sandwich in 1934. And according to, I tumbled down the rabbit hole of interviews and found some of their descendants and then folks who were around and knew the Kaleds. They basically said they created the sandwich in the aftermath of this horrible windstorm that didn't quite approach tornado status, that kind of ripped the landscape apart and kind of ripped the corn from their stalks and so on. And so they created the loose meat sandwich in homage to just kind of the looseness that the landscape upheld after the winds came through and ripped it apart a bit.
Yeah, we have William who emails, I am a native Iowan now living in Platteville, Wisconsin. There are several foods which could be signatures for Iowa, such as sweet corn or Made Rights, the loose meat sandwiches, nearly any casserole, a hot dish, but the pork tenderloin has to be its signature food. I believe that, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, Bright Box in Ball Town across the Mississippi from Wisconsin has been voted to have the best tenderloin sandwich. Well, I suppose the pork is big business in Iowa too.
Yeah, I was down to the loose meat sandwich and the pork tenderloin, it was a very tough choice, but I went with the loose meat sandwich just because it seemed like a more unique dish. Something that you really couldn't find anywhere else. And granted, you can find pork tenderloin elsewhere, but it's probably not like Iowa pork tenderloin. But the loose meat sandwich is very much its own thing that you couldn't find anywhere else. And even though the pork tenderloin might be more ubiquitous in Iowa, just as a dish itself, there's nothing else like the loose meat.
Let's go to Alan in Sheboygan. Well, hi, Alan.
Good morning. This is sort of a serendipitous morning here. I was driving into Sheboygan when I turned on the radio and heard your excellent topic. And when you asked what was the Wisconsin's, I said, well, it's got to be the brat. But sure enough.
Right.
Anyway, I used to work at Old World Wisconsin, a state historical society site, and down near Eagle west of Waukesha. And, of course, we've got about 15 different ethnic groups represented at this Wisconsin historic site. And, of course, the festival, Milwaukee's ethnic festivals, have a lot of different food types represented down there. And that's one of the interesting things about Wisconsin, is that we have more 19th century ethnic groups than any other state. And wherever you go, you'll see these preferences for the old world favorites. I wanted to clarify one thing on the Romans really are given credit for inventing sausage, and they started out with dry sausages. And wherever they went throughout Europe, you can imagine the Roman road going up through, and all they carried their construction and building type and their food types throughout Europe. So that's that's kind of the...
Well, thank you, Alan, and I understand you know a lot about sausages because you are writing a book on brats.
Oh, yes, right. The Brat Eater's Guide to Total Fitness.
I love it. And Alan, we're going to get your contact information because I'm serious. We'll do another. We love to talk about brats, and we'll do another show on brats, especially the fitness book on brats. Thank you very much for joining us. Because we are running. You want to dispute the Romans discovered dry sausage as opposed to the pig that fell into the whatever.
Oh, I don't want to dispute it at all. I know the French love claiming ownership of a lot of culinary items, but apparently the sausage is always dealt primarily with pork. And according to actually this guy Galen, who was a second century Roman doctor, he was one of the first to actually write about pork. So I believe it. He actually told us that the pig entered into the human diet via cannibal cultures as the meat of the pig, according to Galen, this Roman doctor, most closely resembles that of the human in flavor. So these cannibal cultures who were trying to wean themselves off of eating each other used the pig as a way to do that. So in that way, the pig was like methadone to them.
You know, we're almost out of time. I'm going to do a quick lightning round on some of the other signature dishes. Roberta in Brookfield called. We talked about your signature dish for New Mexico already, but why don't you repeat? It's chili sauces, right?
Oh, the red and green chili sauce. I lived in New Mexico for a while, and when you order most anything there, they ask you if you want it red, green, or Christmas. Christmas means both red and green chili sauces on there. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have Lynn on Facebook who says, my grandparents lived in Maryland. I always had to have crab cakes. And that's right. That's the signature dish for Maryland?
It was actually a Maryland blue crab boil.
Okay.
Maryland blue crab. But, crab is the main ingredient. Yep.
Let's try Carol in Park Falls. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I just wanted to share a quick story about my first experience with pasties. I am from the South and moved to northern Wisconsin and was on a trip with my sister-in-law to visit my brother in Lansing, Michigan. So we went up through the UP, and as we're driving up there, I noticed that there's all these signs about pasties. And I started feeling very uncomfortable because every town that we drove by had pasties. And then finally I told my sister-in-law in a disgusted voice, I said, don't these people have any shame at all? I said, they don't feel embarrassed about advertising that they have pasties around.
Yeah, because you miss your...
She goes, no. She goes, this is a meat pie. And I was driving, when we were driving, I was thinking like, my God. I mean, I'm all for freedom and stuff like that, but I thought this is
right.
Outrageous. You know, young kids are reading this stuff.
Thank you, Carol. Yeah, some people new to the area would think that was a pasty and not a pasty, Matthew.
Right, yeah. Yep. It's all in the pronunciation of that A.
Yeah. Well, gosh, I hope that we can have you back sometime because we didn't even scratch the surface. We just did the Midwest for the most part and so much to go. I don't know. Do you want to share one last one with us in less than 30 seconds?
Sure. I'll tell you that the one in West Virginia was fairly controversial. It is rat stew, which is, not necessarily gourmet, but it has gourmet origins. It actually originated in Bordeaux.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll leave you with that.
Thank you very much for being with us. Matthew Gavin Frank is author of The Mad Feast, an ecstatic tour through America's food. Thanks to Marika Suval and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing the program. This is the Ideas Network.